Welcome to Live Into Your Best Life, a show where people learn how to go from where they are to where they'd like to be in any area of life. If you're looking for a new job, wanting to improve your relationships, or even reclaim your health, Polyskaya will share with you a simple formula that can take you on a journey to begin to live into your best life in all areas of life. Now sit back and begin your journey.
Hello, I'm Polyskaya, and welcome to Live Into Your Best Life. Today, I am here with Taylor Bell. So Taylor is this amazing 20-something. I'm going to say that because he's not quite 30 yet, but, and why do I know? Because I am his mom. So he is an amazing person that I have had the honor to watch grow into this fantastic young man. Taylor has interests in many areas, which we're going to learn about today. And one of the things that I really love about Taylor's style is that he doesn't let things hold him back. He doesn't worry about what are people going to think? What are people going to say? He does what is right for him. He follows the breadcrumbs. Every time I spend time with my son, I learn something new. I become smarter. Him and a group of his friends have created a podcast series. And I literally find myself waiting for Sunday night so that I can start listening to the next episode because they're so intriguing. They're so much fun. And I can just tell that it fills them all up. It's their passion. And so one of the reasons that I wanted to bring Taylor on the show today was because, like I mentioned before, Next Stop, Your Dream Job, Navigating Your Journey to Professional Happiness is the book that I wrote last year. Taylor did all of the illustrations in the book. He did the book layout for me, and he's the introductory author of the Explore Educational Options chapter. And I'm going to be bringing each of my authors, co-authors, onto the call and interview them about what is it that they learned through their experiences regarding the book, but also then their journey to help people learn how to live into your best life each day rather than following that path everybody else thinks you should follow. So with that, welcome, Taylor. Great to have you here.
It's good to be here. Appreciate you letting me know that I could come on and talk to you about this stuff.
Yeah, I love it. I appreciate so much that you took the time because I know you have a lot going on. For all of the people out there who have a mom, one of the things that I appreciate about both of my kids is that they always make time for their mom. So I thank you for that. You just start by sharing with the audience a little bit about your journey. I gave a recap. And so you tell us what you'd like us to know about your journey.
Sure. Yeah, it's a long, convoluted road that's had a lot of twists and turns. But I mentioned some of it in my introduction in the book. But basically, I didn't really know what I wanted to do for a long time. I had ideas of some of the stuff that I was interested in, but I never really felt like I had a career path pinned down. When I was in high school, I got into things like graphic design, computer programming, making video games, that kind of stuff. And I wanted to do the latter. I wanted to make video games professionally. So a few of my friends, we got together and we started learning how to do that. We decided to end up going to college together and we were all pursuing the same path there for game development. And I took classes on computer science, programming, never actually got into the game development classes because in my second semester of that first year, I discovered that I was not as good at calculus as I was hoping I would be. And I ended up withdrawing from the class and changing majors because there was more difficult math classes along that road. And I was feeling very intimidated. So I ended up pursuing graphic communications was the name of the path for web design and development.
And you're great at it.
Thank you. I feel like that landscape has changed so much, even in the time that I've been doing it in the last decade, but started with some basic stuff, got to learn a little more about things like content management systems. Recently, I've gotten into things like JavaScript and the front-end frameworks and stuff like that. But anyway, I was learning about design. I was learning about art, and I was going for an art degree, essentially, is what that was. And life happens. Some situations occurred and circumstances led to me dropping out of college. That was, what was that? Is that early 2016? I think I'm pretty sure it was like the very beginning of 2016. And I moved back home down here to the Twin Cities and was just lost. Didn't really know what to do. Started working a job at a sandwich shop and just trying to figure out what was next. Met some really cool people and started working on some other fun projects, board game development, and just other odds and ends that involved art, graphic design, that kind of stuff, freelancing here or there. But I didn't really feel like I had a good path towards any kind of career. And eventually, several years later at this point, I discovered that I was really interested in this weird little thing called cryptography. So if anybody out there is not familiar, cryptography is basically the idea of hiding information. So taking a word and encoding it into a jumbled series of letters and numbers or whatever is a type of cryptography. And it's used for all kinds of puzzles. There's a ton of really interesting crypto puzzles out there. And I started getting into those and learning a little more about them and figuring out like, hey, I really like this puzzle solving thing. I really like the challenge of trying to understand the intricacies of something in order to take it apart, figure out how it works, and then get to the bottom of it. And that led me very quickly, within a couple of days, that led me to the notion. I remember very distinctly, I woke up one day and I remember thinking to myself, I should become a hacker. It was a weird thought. I've never had that thought before, but I have a couple friends who do that professionally, who are penetration testers and hackers for all intents and purposes. And I looked into it. Is this a thing? This is like a viable thing people do for a living? And it turns out there's a lot of elements of cryptography, elements of puzzle solving, and a lot of stuff that you and I have talked about, stuff that I was interested in when I was a kid. It goes back to puzzle solving, it goes back to taking apart computers, figuring out how they work, understanding all the intricacies, the ins and outs, and using that often to build something new, but also just to get to the bottom of it, gain a deeper understanding of it, and solve some problem. And so what I've come to now is this idea of becoming a cybersecurity professional, essentially, and getting into that world because there are so many different layers when it comes to computers and security that it's not just one thing. Where like web design, a lot of it focuses really, really hard on web design. Graphic design, same type of thing. There's a lot of layers in there. But when it comes to cybersecurity, you're almost dealing with everything in the world of electronics and computers. So I'll spare you all the details, but it's really interesting to me. And so I thought, how can I do this? I want to get there. I don't really know how. And I talked with you about that at the time, and you introduced me to some people you knew in the industry. And I was able to meet with some folks and ask questions like, what is a good path towards this career? One of the things that I learned that was valuable, because at this point, I had gone back to school. I ended up graduating with a degree in philosophy, which is a whole other story. But it's not a degree in computer science. And that's a valuable thing when you're trying to get into a computer field.
While your philosophy major may not be a computer science major, right? I would like to tease apart a little bit about that. Because tell people, what does philosophy give you? Why did you choose that path?
That's a really hard question. I think, similar to the whole puzzle solving thing, philosophy really comes down to analyzing existence in a lot of ways. There's a lot of different aspects to philosophy. There's things like logic. There's epistemology, which is the study of being, of existence. There's morality and ethics. There's different layers, and they all get very complicated. There's been a lot of things said about them over the years, over hundreds of years, by a lot of people. It's an interesting way to try to think deeper about some subject.
And that's why I wanted you to share with the audience what your degree is in and a little about it, because it allows you to think about the world differently.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the reasons you are so brilliant. I always knew that you were going to go into something with computers. We've known that. You were like, what, 7 or 8 when you wanted your first URL? And I bought you a URL, right? Remember that? And so you've always had this drive towards technology. You were 2 years old when you installed your first CD and started playing a game. And I'll never forget that Christmas morning when you came up and said, Santa gave me this Legoland game and I love it. And I'm like, what? Because I had no idea that you knew how to install a game and you were 2 years old. So it's in your DNA. I think that's brilliant. And the philosophy is also in your DNA, just wanting to understand things differently. And I think that this is part of why you ask such powerful questions and want to get to the bottom of what's really going on to solve a problem rather than putting a Band-Aid over it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I think that's pretty cool. So philosophy, while it might not be the major for what you do in a living, I just want to point out to people that the education, if it's something you enjoyed, mine's organizational leadership. Oh, I happen to love business strategy and leading people and things like that. But if your education is in something you really enjoyed or that helps you, find a way to use that education in your next step. So very cool. Okay. So now keep going. So in 2020, and I'm going to call this out too, because I tell people follow the breadcrumbs. And so in 2020, I was consulting for a very large global organization, and I happened to be the coach for the CISO, so the Chief Information Security Officer, and her leadership team at that time. And that's how I happened to have people at my disposal. And when you started talking about, hey, I'm interested in this thing, I'm like, ooh, I have people for you to talk to. So now, continue telling your story.
Yeah. One of the biggest recommendations I got from the folks I talked to was look into certification paths. There's a lot of ways out there to learn skills and demonstrate. I've learned these skills in a way that a company will appreciate or respect that don't involve a college degree. I think having a degree certainly has been helpful in some ways as just getting through barriers and whatnot. But I think pursuing certifications has been the most interesting part of this experience for me. Definitely the most intensive. Because so far I only have one certification, but I am going after a couple others. And the process to getting there was just fascinating. I learned so many things about networking, like computer networking and computer security and how operating systems work and all of this wide variety of stuff. And as I was saying this recently to one of my coworkers, the more that I learn about a variety of different computer subjects, the more I understand how interconnected they are, and the more it feeds into the goal of what I'm trying to do with getting into cybersecurity. Because you have to, in this world of cybersecurity and stuff, you have to understand the big picture as well as the finer parts.
Nice. Very cool.
So then I got into a program for not cybersecurity, but for data engineering, which is a type of software engineering that involves creating applications that can take data from one place to another. And went through the training for that and got into a contract position working where I'm at now. And now I've been there for 2 years as a full-time employee. And so I'm not working in cybersecurity yet, but I am still moving towards it. I'm still learning more about it. I've gotten a chance to talk to some people where I work now that are in the security area. And yeah, it's been an interesting path.
Now, let's talk about how you got into data engineering, right? Because one of the things you and I had talked about was there are companies, like I remember years and years ago, your dad got hired by a company and they sent all these recent college grads away for a long period of time to learn how to be consultants and train them all these technical skills. That's not a commonplace situation in this day and age. It was back long ago. But you found an organization that actually has a program like that, a couple of programs, I believe, where they train people in the specific skills and they have a client on the end who wants those people. And they can bring you in at a reasonable rate, but you get real practical skills and workplace experience. And then you have the opportunity to become an employee or not. And so I just want to call out that is also a way where instead of the traditional educational path, right? Because your educational path is about as traditional as mine has been.
And yeah, probably.
And we've gotten to places that perhaps some people never thought we would because we haven't followed one path to get to one destination. And you also go to conventions.
I do. Yeah.
And that's a form of education as well.
That is true. And networking. Let me touch on the training program a little bit. So it's called Barriers to Entry, and it's run by a company here in Minnesota. They have branches in other parts of the country as well, but it's York Solutions, just to plug that real quick. And yeah, so I had no idea what data engineering was. I had never heard of it, never at all. And it was really funny because I don't think anybody else in the program had heard of it either. And the first day it was like, who knows what data engineering is? And nobody raised their hand. And I'm like, all right, let's teach you about what this is.
Nice.
But yeah, it was a really interesting experience when coming through. So when I first applied to it and got into the program and stuff, I was working before that. I was working at a warehouse, which was actually one of my favorite jobs just because of how fun it was. But working at a warehouse, just shipping screws from that warehouse down to another one, I would drive the same road every day, drive an hour down south, drop off a bunch of screws, and then head back north. It was very steady. It was a lot of predictability and a lot of time to listen to podcasts or listen to audiobooks or whatever. I was only making so much at this place. And when I got into the B2E program, it was the same amount. It was the same pay that I was getting at the time for the training, which meant that I didn't have to compromise my livelihood in order to get into this training. What I've learned since then is a lot of people are already in jobs where they're making more than that. It was $15 an hour at that time. I don't know if it's different now, but a lot of people are already in the industry or whatever who are getting into this program. And one of the big considerations for them there is I have to take a pay cut or whatever. And then there's people on the other side of that who don't have a job at all. There's people who have come over from India, for instance, and they've been living here and haven't worked for a couple of years because of the way that those laws work out.
Circumstances,
I don't know.
Yeah.
And then are ready to get back into the workforce and they're looking for something. And so whatever the pay is better than what they were making.
Yeah.
So it was a really interesting opportunity to be in.
Now, I want to call out two things because you don't just get to register to be part of Barriers to Entries like you would a school, right? There's an application process and you have to actually show your aptitude. And I'd like to take a mom moment to brag a little about my brilliant son. And you were one of the top performers that they'd seen, right? In your entry test.
Yeah.
And that led you to an opportunity to, and just for the listeners, my son tends to be very humble, doesn't talk a lot about how amazing he is. So his mom's got to. But one of the things also in the program, you actually became a natural leader. Like you've always been a leader, but they saw it and they actually gave you an opportunity, which I believe has helped you there, helped create some opportunities with York, but also have helped you in your day job as well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll share a little about that. I became what's called a tech lead pretty quick into it was a 3-month program. I think it was probably a month into it. The instructor reached out and said, hey, would you want to do this? There was no such thing as a tech lead yet at that point in their programs. I guess I was like the first one. And then now since then, they've been establishing that and they'll bring people in before the training starts to be a tech lead so that the rest of the students have somebody to help with things like basically what I did was tutoring or assistance the other people who as they were learning, I worked on some curriculum-based stuff because it was the first data engineering cohort they had done, and they were making it up as they went. So we were building out the material, we were building out the grading structure, the infrastructure, and where we were storing our assignments, all that kind of stuff. So helped with all that fun stuff, and we got another tech lead near the end of the program. Yeah, it was really cool. And then at where I work now, getting into that job, I do think it, not only being a tech lead, but just how things went in the program led to me getting a sweet situation at work.
All right. You were in this program and then you became, in essence, an interviewer to help identify who would be good candidates for the next programs. Mm-hmm. And you had a little bit of an awareness and a snafu that happened in the journey. You discovered that people were trying to cheat their way in by using AI. So can you share a little about that? Because I know you're very adept in AI and the various activities that your pictures that you create are amazing and different things like that. So
I don't know about very.
Share a little about that experience and kind of a warning, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I would love to. Yeah. So I do technical interviews. The same application process I went through. You build out some programs to submit, and then somebody grades them and interviews you and has you explain them and walk through what is the code doing. And that is the really important thing about the problem here, right? So what I noticed at first was that some people would basically look up the answers because other applicants or other students had published their answers, and then people would just copy and paste the solution, the program, and turn it in. And it's like, great, it works in most cases, but do you know how it works, right? Do you know why it works? And then I started to see all these, because when that was going on, it was like the same two or three that people were copying and pasting. Mm. So I recognized the code immediately. The same comments, the same formatting structure, all that stuff. And then I noticed a bunch of different ones, but they were all similar, like weirdly close. And there were some interesting tells here or there in the way that it was formatted. And I was looking into it. And one morning, I remember I had interviewed somebody who had done one. And again, they didn't understand how the code worked. This was a repeating theme. Every time I kept seeing one of these, they didn't get it. I would ask them if they found answers online or something. And in most cases, they would say no, that they coded it themselves, but they couldn't explain any of it, even down to very basic things. And on a whim, I thought, what would happen if I threw the challenge description into ChatGPT? What would it do? And lo and behold, it spit out the exact answer, exactly like formatted, just like all these other ones I've been seeing. And it worked, right? Like the code worked. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking, okay, so people are using AI to generate answers, whole answers out of nothing. And they don't understand how it works because they're just telling a robot to do it. And I have a few problems with this, but it's complicated. And we're getting into a landscape in technology right now where AI or learning machines are coming to a point where they're now very useful. They can be done. A lot of things can be done with them. And I use AI for code generation in my work now. So where is the line? I think that's the important part. And I think what it comes down to is if you're going to use tools like that, or if you're going to Google the answers and steal somebody else's work, you have to make sure that you are putting in the time and effort to understand, to learn from what you're doing. Because if you don't, then you haven't gained anything. And if you get into, and this is the really dangerous part, if you get into this program not having learned anything ahead of time, if you cheat your way in, you will not be set up for success. And what I would do as a technical interviewer in that case is fail them and tell them, here's why, and here are some options, here are some suggestions where you can go and what kinds of things you can do to spend some time learning the fundamentals and how you can think about these AI tools in a little bit of a different way. And that is as a means of learning how things work. So what I do, our enterprise now has access to a pretty large scale AI coding assistant. And what I do is I can, in my development environment, I can highlight code and say, tell me what this does. And it will explain all the little elements about what it's doing. And I can understand more about how the code that I'm approaching works, because I haven't written all the code that I'm approaching. Sometimes it's written by other people. Mm-hmm. Or I can write my own code or ask it to help me figure out, I have a couple options here. Which route should I go? And what are the pros and cons of both? And what are the possible security implications for that solution? Or is there a more efficient way I can do this? And all the while, it is always giving very detailed answers. And so I spend the time to read all the things it says because they're really useful. And I've caught it a couple times in mistakes. That's, I think, also a really important part about this is these machines are not perfect.
They're as smart as the people who have given them the information, right? They can't, at least now, they can't think. They don't have that heart and soul that people mm-hmm. bring. And so I think what you're talking about here is so important, because I see a lot of people promoting AI and learn about AI and all the great ways, and the various ways that AI is being used. We need to be aware of, like, security purposes, right? Or privacy topics. And then what you're talking about, just using this tool to cheat your way through or get into something, if you don't have the ins and outs, don't understand how something works. And this goes back to your cyber, mm-hmm. to the wanting to solve problems and wanting to see how things work. And so the cryptology, I should say, and how the bits and how they fit together, that's what programming is. That's what development
yep.
is.
Absolutely.
And if someone wants to get into IT, you have to understand how things work, because if you don't, fast forward, something breaks. And let's just say you work for a global company.
Yeah.
And like you just mentioned, you're working with code someone else started. So you don't know. And everybody's coding, everybody writes code in a way that's unique to themselves. It's like how we talk or how we write. Code is no different. And so then you have to understand the nuances they put in and not break what they did to continue to build out and enhance the functionality.
Yep.
AI doesn't have that nuance, but it, like you said, it can teach you what they were thinking so that you can then build on it. Mm-hmm. But if people don't look at AI as a tool to help enhance and rather to just skate by doing the work to get where they want to be, that could have horrendous negative impact on a person, a company, the world, if we don't be careful about how we go about things like this.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's crazy.
So it's weird.
So what else would you like to tell the listeners about your journey? Just some nuggets to wrap up about, like, mm-hmm. how you've gotten, what are some of the key nuggets that people can take away regarding your story, how you've gotten where you are?
I think the biggest thing comes back to stuff that you've probably said my whole life, or certainly longer, which is, if you can imagine something, you can get there, right? You can make your dreams happen, like, flat out, period. And I just gave a copy of your book to my friend Ross the other day, or yesterday. And while he was flipping through it, there was one of the headlines. I don't remember exactly what the wording was, but it was along those lines. And I emphasized that point to him because he's been struggling to find a job. And if you set your sights onto something that you want to do, there is going to be some way that you can get there. It might not be easy. It might be a very challenging road. It might not be quick. I've been pursuing the cybersecurity thing now for 3 years and four years almost. And I'm making progress. I'm not there yet, and that's okay. The first step is to imagine the thing. Imagine yourself in that, to borrow some stuff that you said. Imagining yourself, what does your best life look like? And then imagine living into it and getting there. The second step is to take action. And this is the thing that I think a lot of people get paralyzed by. And I definitely have been at different parts of my life. But every single time, the thing that helps is getting off the floor and doing something. Yeah.
Very good. Very good. If you were to, and at the end of each chapter in my book, I ask this question. So I'm going to ask it to each of the people that I interview as well. If you were to have a conversation with your younger self, or even your nephew, your little five-year-old nephew, who's your mini-me, he just adores you. What advice would you give that younger person?
I would say there may be times in life where you feel discouraged because you feel like you're not good enough at something. It is okay to be not good enough at something, because we all start somewhere and you have to learn in order to become great. Try not to let that discouragement get you down. Just let it encourage you to try a little harder and push a little farther.
Great words of wisdom for any age. Thank you for sharing. Wonderful. Taylor, it's been an honor to get to have a conversation with you. Thank you for sharing your journey. And a tidbit I'd like to call out is there isn't one straight path. And I'd also like to call out that in my book, I talk about the things that you enjoyed doing as a kid tend to be the things that you're really great at as an adult. But it's not just, oh, I like to play baseball, so I'm going to be a pro baseball player, right? But it's those little things like you loved technology, you loved puzzles, and now look at where you are. You're doing that every day. So just our childhood gives us so many indications, and education doesn't have to be a four-year degree. Yep. You don't necessarily have to get your master's. And if a company thinks that's all you have to have, I'd like to caution and say a piece of paper is only as good as the piece of paper. And it's the experiences that actually bring the well-rounded person a company wants to hire. So thank you very much for your time. And
thank you.
I will talk to you soon.
Yep, sounds good.
So listeners, thank you for tuning in to Live Into Your Best Life. Please subscribe, share, if you've enjoyed this, and go back and listen to some of the previous recordings as well, because it gives you that step-by-step approach on how to bring your life into that level that you're really looking for and find those answers and move forward, just like Taylor has. So until next time, enjoy the journey, enjoy each moment, and live into your best life.
Thank you for listening to Polyskaya, your show host for Live Into Your Best Life. Check out the show notes and visit her at polyskaya.com to learn more and continue your journey. Until next week, enjoy the adventure.